nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
All right, it's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. In the Garden is brought to you in part by The Flower Farm. The Flower Farm's garden center is open for the spring season and is located right behind Island Flowers on Main Street. They've got lots of blooming pansies, violas, hellebores, and more, hanging baskets, shrubs ready to plant, lots of good stuff there. They're open 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday. The Flower Farm Garden Center.
Eat 'em with eggs, you can eat 'em with gravy. Eat 'em with beans, pinto or navy. Put 'em on a side, put 'em in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
All right, and we've got Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the line, coming to us from Juneau. How are you, Ed?
I'm pretty good, Oren. And just a warning, I was just looking at my phone. I might run out of phone battery power here, but we'll go till it dies. How's that sound?
That sounds fair. Okay. That's life in the old remote communicating
age.
That's
right. I'm out in the garden. We're got a helper, and we are pruning today. So,
oh, cool.
It's a day with low fire danger here, but it's just barely sprinkling. So I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, yeah. There's no risk of sunstroke today, but it's a nice day to be out working.
No sunscreen needed.
Cool. Well, how do you attack your pruning needs this time of year? What's your strategy?
Well, some of it is, and this in this yard particularly, some of it, even though I don't mow lawns, I know I used to mow lawns a very long time ago, and I really, really hated walking along with the lawn, pushing the lawnmower, and there's all these overhanging branches sticking out in my space, particularly if they're spiny branches. Mm. So we've been pruning rose bushes, spireas, saskatoons, cherry trees, and other stuff, all of which had branches that are out in the way. Some of the trees, let's see, I guess there's an ornamental apple tree, had a bunch of root suckers. We're removing that. My helper here is pruning on a snowberry bush, which again has lots of suckers. It's its normal way of growing, but it has lots of suckers, and they're kind of growing out into a garden bed. So we're trying to push that back. So again, various reasons for pruning. We're shaping. We're taking out dead wood. We're taking out wood, which, like in the raspberries down here, the raspberry shoots that gave us fruit last summer are dead.
Right.
And so we want to prune that stuff away, clean it out, so that we can see the new growth. And if we need to, we can train it, trellis it, stake it, tie it up, so that it doesn't fall over and is more easy for us to harvest this year.
That makes sense. That makes good sense. Yeah, well, that's an important part of garden prep this time of year, isn't it?
It is, and we're taking out, well, I'm looking at these spruce trees here that are, there's some 10-foot, 12-foot spruce trees that need to go. They're volunteers growing in the garden bed. They need to go, but I've got to bring my chainsaw back for these. They're bigger than my hand pruners will do. But, and that's another thing that we need to think about is, do you have the right tools for the job to do the pruning? It does make a difference. Having certainly the hand tools, the hand clippers that fit your hand, there's lots of different kinds of those, but really having them that they fit your hand is going to mean, depending on how much pruning you do, how sore your hands are going to be. Some are ambidextrous, some you can use either hand, some are only in one hand pretty much. But having an assortment of different size tools, from the hand clippers up to a couple different sizes of loppers, and then up to when you get too big of branches or whatever, or like the spruce trees, too big for that, then you should have some saws. And again, whether it be hand saws or you get into the chainsaws or other, and there's some of the hedging, the electric hedge trimmers. I've got a corded one and a cordless one, and they're both really handy for things like spireas and others that you want to give a haircut to.
Mm-hmm. You know, this
and have the tools. Have those tools be sharp tools too.
Yeah.
So again, you know, if last year you did a lot of work with them and they got left out in the rain, and other than they're kind of rusty, they really need to be cleaned up, oiled, and sharpened.
Mm-hmm.
So that really, really makes a difference in your comfort level and how hard you're working
mm-hmm.
out there in your garden.
Absolutely. A thought just came to mind as you were describing sort of unwanted volunteers in your garden. Do you ever have to do battle against cow parsnip, or they call it wild celery around here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do you win that battle? That thing is so...
That's a challenge. I mean, and of course, some people are very sensitive to it. I mean, they have allergic reactions to it, so you want to keep those folks away from it. But when it first starts to come up, it's actually edible. I mean, the very first new growth on it can be edible, very new young shoots. And once they get up and bigger, you can actually take the stems and you can peel the outer skins with kind of the irritating hairs off of them, chop those up and saute them, and they are edible too. So, I mean, eating your weeds is one way. But there's so much of it out there that you're not quite enough. So what you may try to do, and it's a challenge, if they are very well established, is that they have a fairly deep taproot. I mean, they are in the same family with carrots, you know, and parsnips, true parsnips, the really good and tasty ones that we just harvested some last night.
Mm.
So you can certainly dig them out, dig that root down. And that's one way to go. And again, if they're in places where you can just cut them back and put some cardboard over them, you know, basically you're trying to smother them,
mm-hmm.
that works.
Mm.
Or black plastic
mm-hmm.
can also work in a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way to get rid of them. And if other things fail, you can use chemicals. I mean, you certainly can use Roundup if you are careful about how you use it. And, I mean, if it's in the middle of a bed or something, maybe you just want to paint your solution onto the leaves, especially the new young leaves, or you cut off a bigger stem and you can paint that onto the cut surfaces of the stem, which you can also do to things like alders,
huh.
So they don't sprout back. You know, cut the alder tree down, and then you paint on that stem, that cut stem, some of the concentrated Roundup or other herbicide. So again, that too can help keep that big plant, big weed, from resprouting.
If folks are trying to do battle against these kind of things in what they would be using as their maybe garden beds, and they don't want to use a herbicide like Roundup.
Sure, yeah.
Are there?
So, I mean, digging them out is a perfectly good solution.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you can just cover them up, but again, it's an ongoing battle. And then, of course, the other thing is, and I do this around my yard too, where it gets a little wilder, is I really try to work hard in late summer to remove, or actually when they start to flower,
mm-hmm.
and break off the flower heads, so that we don't get more seeds that then seed into the garden.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, remove them. Kind of like, well, good luck with this. But, I mean, you can do the same thing with dandelions around your yard. But the problem is you got to go out there a quarter mile or half mile away because they float in on the breeze. So the cow parsnips, at least, they don't travel that far.
Right. I think they make like 100,000 seeds per plant.
Well, they make, I mean, one flower head does put out a lot.
Hmm.
I mean, it really does.
So you want to get them before
there are hundreds, at least, of seeds. They don't last a very long, you know, many, many years like some other weed seeds can, like buttercup seeds can last hundreds of years.
Wow.
But still, if you remove them before they go to flower, you know, you're deadheading them
mm-hmm.
before they are mature, then that will gain you some.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, that plant, that's my least favorite plant.
Okay. Yeah, there's a few others, but... So we want to go back to pruning.
Yeah.
You know, what are the basics, the very basics of pruning? The first thing really is look at the shrub or the tree, and the first thing to remove is deadwood. So in the easy way of just teaching my young man here to look, of course, look at now things are budding out. So there's branches, like on the cherry tree, there's branches here that have green buds and flower buds. We clipped some of those flowering stems, the long tips, to put in water, and they should open up here in the next week or so. But it's really obvious to see that that is green and alive. But if you see some branches that are darker, brown to black, and they don't have any flower buds, leafy buds on them, well, that's a pretty good indication that they're dead. So remove those, and you want to remove them back to where there is healthy green growth. That's the first thing. And taking out dead wood any time of year. It doesn't matter if you see it in the summertime, whether it be January or July or May or whatever. Cut it off, remove it, and get rid of it. Burn it if you can. Pile it up if you can, or haul it to dump, whatever you need to do. And then start looking at just shaping the direction the branches are going. And if you look and you see what looks like a tangled mass, you see branches, one branch going across another one. Sometimes they'll almost spiral around each other, and you can see they're obviously rubbing on each other. Then that can literally open up a wound, which can then get infected by bacteria or fungus. So we want to remove one or maybe multiple branches which are doing that. And again, we're cutting them back then to where maybe we have another branch lower down that is growing out into an open space. Or we want to prune some of that thick material down to open up a bit more space to allow light and better air circulation to get into the tree, the shrub. Again, if it's something that's producing fruit, that's beneficial, because then you'll get better carbohydrate production, better sugar production, better color on the fruit, better flavor, and again, less issues with, if we've got better air circulation, we have less issues for fungus and disease to infect the tree.
That makes sense.
Or the fruits also, where if you may have seen on cherries or apples, you'll see apple scab, or you'll see the cherry black spots on the cherries when they get a fungus issue on some of those.
Right. So, yeah, circulation of air, keeping down the fungus, just like we would do in our greenhouses.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, don't plant your tomatoes too close together, even though they're so tiny. When you're putting them in there now and you think, oh, I can get at least 6 more, 8 more, 12 more plants in here, there's lots of room until July. When it's time to start pulling out the tomato plants, and you can't bear to do that.
No. But you have to, if that's what you've done, yeah.
Right, exactly. So again, so when to prune? I mean, springtime for most plants is a good time for pruning. We are certainly today, these cherry branches that we took off, have lots of flower buds on them. Could have been more cherries. Same thing with apples. You know, we're going to be pruning off some branches off the apple trees, and we're going to be taking off flower buds with them. But that's okay, because there are a lot of buds there, and there's still going to be, should be plenty more to provide us with fruit even after we thin these out. And the idea is we're taking off some of these buds. There's still just as much nutrients in the roots to feed the fruits in addition to what the plant makes through its leaves with the help of the sun, so that we should get, I mean, we can only get cherries that are so large, but again, fewer but larger apples certainly can happen if we have less competition. And later on we'll talk about thinning, like maybe in early June or mid-June, actually thinning the fruits to do exactly that. So their energy goes into fewer but larger fruits.
Yeah, that's a good thing to remember when we're feeling, you know, hesitant to take away something that looks like it has a chance at becoming fruit. Yeah, remember, less is more. The nutrients, the energy in the whole plant is going to be distributed to the fruits. So fewer means bigger. Yeah.
Yep. So there's some things we might not want to be pruning this time of year. A couple things are. Maples, some folks will avoid pruning maples this time of year. The sap is rising, and you cut branches off the maples, and the branches will start to drip. You know, it is sap. You could catch the sap if you could manage to get enough gallons of it and make make some syrup, but that's not very likely. But with maples, I'll often wait till later. I'll do summer pruning on those. You know, wait till June and do some pruning then. But again, if there are some dead branches on there, remove those. Mm. Lilacs and rhododendrons. If you've had, you know, depending on how much snow load you had, you know, we had the kind of heavy snows in March. If you got broken branches, remove the broken branches. Get those out of there. But otherwise, with lilacs and rhodies, it's worthwhile waiting until they flower or immediately after they flower and do your pruning then. We actually did that. I did that down in West Lynn, Oregon, last weekend at a friend's place. The guy said, "Hey, what about pruning these?" And I said, "Sure." You know, and they were just starting into bloom. So we pruned back about a third of the bush, and we got a big, beautiful bouquet of nice lilac flowers to share. We actually shared, left some there, and then I took them up to his other place, other friends that we were staying with.
Oh, cool.
So, but wait on the lilacs. However, with the lilacs, if there's lots of suckers growing up around the base of the lilac bush shrub, it is worth taking those out. Mm. Again, that way then you've got more of the energy of the plant is going to be going up into the bigger, the bit older parts of the shrub where the flowers are. So again, that is worth doing some of that thinning. And lilacs are actually pretty easy to propagate. So if you like that particular, whether it be a white one or a purple one or a pink lilac or whatever, you can take a lot of those cuttings, like those suckers, put them in damp soil with a little bit of rooting hormone, and you can have more lilacs.
Right.
Whether for yourself or to share with friends.
Huh. Yeah, that makes sense. So again, that's about kind of shaping the path that the plant's energy is going to go to. It is. It's trying to reproduce.
Maybe if you've got, for some folks who have a really ancient lilac, sometimes it's worthwhile allowing a few of those root suckers to come up, because eventually they may end up replacing, as they grow up, they may end up replacing the oldest growth on the shrub. Mm-hmm. So, and some of this, that kind of applies to things like gooseberries and currants in the same way that you may well take out. Again, they are suckering shrubs. That's their normal growth habit. You may want to take out some of that biggest, oldest growth out of the center, and you take out maybe a quarter of it every year. You look at it, see the biggest, oldest, the darkest stems. Take those out, and then those new shoots that come up this year may have a few fruits on them next year, flowers and fruits, and more than in years after that. So again, you're kind of renewing the berry bushes in that way for those particular ones, like the gooseberries and currants, that grow that way.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, yeah. That's good to think about. Those suckers, do they only kind of go out and up, or do they also sort of eventually establish their own sort of expanding root systems, or how does that?
It depends. Yeah, it depends on where they are sprouting from. You know, when you look at the suckers, are they sprouting from below ground level? In which case, again, there, if you can get down and cut them off down there lower, then they root really easily. For the gooseberries and currants, they're, if anything, easier than lilacs to root, to have more of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they can grow, or you can deliberately actually pile soil up around the base of that bush where those suckers are growing, mm-hmm. with the intention of stimulating more rooting, mm-hmm. and then, you know, maybe that's going to be your propagating shrub.
Right.
So you know that whether you have a particularly good one that other folks are asking for, or you want a lot more of those for making jams, jellies, red currant wine, whatever, you know, you can propagate your own very easily.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that's great to think about. Yeah, cool. Well, I'm glad we caught you today when you were out there pruning, so we could dig into this topic.
Yep. Well, it's a great time of year for it, and we're gonna have a big brush pile here. This one I think is just gonna get to rot on its own, but some of the other ones are going to we'll have a dandy bonfire at some point here too. So we're making progress. We are tidying up the yard, making it look better, and we're gaining on it. And this is the time of year. It's, you know, spring cleanup, and everything gets a haircut, I'm just about ready for my spring look also.
Yeah, it's that time of year. Well, what should we be thinking about for the coming week as far as the to-do list in the garden?
Starting some more of the tender stuff, things like zucchinis and cucumbers. And I would say, you know, next week we can probably plan to talk about potatoes. Certainly the potatoes have just literally, I just picked up my seed potatoes from one of the other folks we shared an order with today. So getting our seed, getting our beds ready and get ready for planting potatoes.
Okay, excellent. Well, that I look forward to talking about that next week then. And yeah, we'll invite callers to call in next week. I'm sure people want to contribute either a comment or a question about potatoes when we dig into it next week. And Ed, okay. I'll let you get back to it. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise with us.
You're very welcome, Oren. Till next week.
Okay, till next week.
Hopefully more sunshine.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
All right.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Always a treat in the garden with Ed Bajarski. And thank you to The Flower Farm, who's a supporter of In the Garden. Their garden center is open for the spring season. It's located behind Island Flowers on Main Street. They've got lots of stuff blooming there, starts and flowers and hanging baskets, shrubs ready to plant, lots of good stuff. They're open 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday, behind Island Flowers there on Main Street.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, you can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love.